Yeah, the only thing I stored in my brain related to this was my sixth grade teacher telling us the formula for the area of the circle and then saying, no, no, pi r round.
Smoking strange when I met a penguin. Goddamn it, he was deranged. We were talking soccer, then it all fucking changed. I saw him press recording, uploaded to his page. Oh, that deranged penguin. For an Antarctic bird, he sure talks fast. Oh, that deranged penguin. He made me an unwilling victim of his podcast.
Man,
testing's over.
So then I guess we're just recording the show right now, huh? Right now is live the show.
This is the show. It's happening.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Guys, this is episode 190 of the Deranged Penguin Podcast.
That's a lot of podcasting y'all did, man.
I know. We're 10 episodes away from the big 200. We have to plan.
At least three episodes Del's been on.
Give or take two.
Yeah. So what are we talking about tonight? I mean, we have Martin Luther King's birthday or that Great happened. Americans Day, as Biloxi, Mississippi noted. I'm blaming Del for that. Way to go, Del.
Or Robert E. Lee Day.
Yeah.
That's Mississippi, Arkansas, and Virginia apparently celebrate. When I searched on Google for, we can talk about this, when I searched on Google for hours for something on Monday, it said hours may be different due to Robert E. Lee Day. And I was like, serious? Did somebody get, like, mess with the Google metadata? No, it's a lit thing, really, really.
Awesome.
Good job,
Mississippi.
Yeah.
It's not racist at all, though, you know? They just figured that would be a good day to celebrate Robert E. Lee.
Well, his birthday is the 19th or whatever, but yes, yeah. Just happened to coincide, yeah.
Yeah.
Be convenient.
You look like you're about to say something, Gina.
Well, I was going to say, then I don't feel bad saying, good job, Mississippi, pat yourselves on your shirtless backs, but yes. Then I thought better of it, and then I thought, worse of it again?
He thought better and better of it.
Yes, yeah. But thought way better
highly
of it.
Perfect statement to make.
Oh, people.
We went marching. We went,
did he?
Yeah.
We did for the first time in our lives.
Yeah. So San Antonio has, if not the largest, one of the largest Martin Luther King marches in the country, which is surprising. And when I told that to somebody that was new to the town, they're like, really? Why? And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know why. I didn't figure that out.
No idea, but it's a thing.
I mean, it's kind of cool, I guess. I mean, you know, I guess.
Yeah, so we decided to finally go join in. And we took our daughter with us. So, like, she's been having the biggest first year of life ever. She does everything.
Yeah, she's been to more college football games in her first year of life than I had in my first, like, 20 years. Like, literally, it's ridiculous. Yeah. And
good parent.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. She's just tagging along, man. And then she went to March, and then I guess technically she went to Spain, what else, to Europe, when she was in the woob.
Yeah, in a
so,
way.
So she's already lived a better life than I have. She's going to let me.
It's all
when
downhill
she's 2 years
from
old.
Here.
She's peaked.
So, Adam, what did you think of the march?
What I think of it, I mean,
what'd you expect?
Like most things, when you're there, it's kind of underwhelming. But later on, you're like, oh, that was kind of cool, huh? That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, as
much.
I'm walking, I'm just, you know, you're just walking. And a march, even one like that's kind of rousing, and this one was not rousing. Like, nobody's particularly protesting or anything. Saw a few Black Lives Matter shirts. But, I mean, there's nobody on the opposite side, like, waiting, like, no, they don't. You know, nobody, everybody's like, yeah, Martin Luther King Day. Like, it was total support. So it's not like it was kind of contentious or tense or anything. It was just, it was all celebratory. And then there's even on the side, the Great American Hustle happening, where like a bail bonds place had a DJ out there and was celebrating. And, you know, you can see people trying to make a buck here and there.
A lot of music, yeah.
Yeah, it's like some random...
May or may not have been appropriate MLK Day music, yeah. But a lot of music.
Get that blessing. there was like a random band that had like a film crew. I didn't really understand what they... We were walking... So the thing is, we parked. We were a little bit late.
Let's talk logistics stereotype for marching.
We were a little bit late to MLK March. And so we had to park kind of midway through the path. Walk to the beginning of the path and then walk down. We actually like marched longer than anybody else.
Yeah,
we are more for freedom than everybody else, I think. we have extra freedom in our legs. So we walked by that group. It was like just bros, like bearded bros, setting up with their bass guitar and whatever, and like their drums and things. And then somebody with a camera. I was like, are they gonna just film a music video here? Is that what's gonna happen? And I think that's what they did, because when we walked back past them, they're playing. I don't know. It was like some white dude with a beard. I think they had a chick with them. I couldn't get a good look. But if any of that helps you place that band, there you go. It was them. They were there making music.
Yeah. So it was kind of weird. Like,
we were on TV.
I didn't know exactly what it was going to be like. And like you said, we had to park midway because we showed up too late to ride the bus to the starting point. So, you know, we're walking and thinking about where to stop, where to jump in. Like, do we wait for everybody to walk past us and then jump in? Or is it messed up if we, like, cut to the front of the march when we didn't show up and wait, like, our turn to get that spot? So we ended up, you know, just kind of joining in with the crowd as they passed us. And I was thinking when we started walking, you know, we're kind of just having conversation, like, should we be talking about just random things, or should we be sticking to like a themed conversation during this march? And then I felt bad, like laughing at jokes. Like, should I look serious right now, or like should I be contemplating something, not like laughing about what people are wearing or anything like that? It was kind of weird.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure what headspace I should be in.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like I said, when you don't have like a rallying force there, and I mean, you would think like people would be like, well, especially given the fact that like John Lewis was ridiculed by Donald Trump, right? Like a couple of days before. But there was not, there's nobody to talk to. So it just kind of I feel like it was fine because it's kind of a celebration, everybody's there. They're like, you know what, let's have a good time. And I think that in and of itself is like a good statement to have. Like, here's everybody having a good time. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'd just be like solemn and contemplative all the damn time. And, you know, who wants that? you need to chuckle.
The purpose of the march, I don't think, is just to remember the struggle that they went through and that continues to go on today, but to celebrate the triumphs that Martin Luther King, you know, did, to march in kind of honor of, yes, to connect to the past, the marches that were the meaning to change the future, but to march to say, yeah, this changed the future. You know, I think celebration is appropriate for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's your white splaining of the day.
Thank you, Del.
White man,
I am allowed to celebrate. Thank you.
I think usually I try to listen to a speech. I have a dream speech, the famous one, or one of his speeches, or a combination of all.
Yeah,
of them.
Did you listen to it?
I didn't then because I was like, surely we're going to hear it when we're marching. And we didn't. And so then, yeah, you know, then we got hungry and had to go eat.
We skipped our coffee to be on time. So
yeah,
we had to go get breakfast.
Were you making a joke? You're like, can we get a
poignant moment that I got hungry?
Well, I think Gina was like, you think they have coffee around here? Can we get a coffee?
Should we stop for coffee?
And the thing was, when you could, we were just a little bit late. Like, the DJ was like, we got coffee over here at Trinity Baptist Church. And we had to stop by. Oh, it looks like we're out of coffee, so you sleeping. But we still got turkey legs over here. And so, I mean, like I said, everybody was getting a little bit of capitalism on. That's good. I like that. What was it? Some libertarian dude said, first and foremost, Martin Luther King was a small business owner.
This was on Twitter, right?
And a capitalist. And I was like, really? First and foremost, huh? Martin Luther King. That's what you think.
Yeah. I don't recall his big speeches
George W.
being
Bush,
about
small first and foremost. Businesses. When I think of him, I think, obviously, painter, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Number one.
Oh, man.
Good job, guys.
I love how people who are really just, like, ultra-capitalists, like, call themselves libertarians.
Yeah.
Capitalism has very little to do with true libertarianism.
I think, we started... Have you seen any of the Black Mirror episodes, Del?
Mm-hmm, I've seen all of them.
Okay, we've only seen, the first three or four.
The first one is really hard to watch. That's a really hard way to start the show.
Yeah.
The first one was the first one.
The pig?
The bestiality one, yeah.
Oh. that was funny to me.
I didn't really know what the premise was of the show, so yeah. I was kind of like, wait, what's happening? What is this about?
I don't know, man. I wouldn't have done it. And I know they kind of put them in a bind there. They're like, well, you kind
of... For those of you who haven't seen the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they kind of give them
I would say skip the first episode. You can watch them in any order. It doesn't matter.
So I think this came out in 2011, right? Whatever. You ain't watched it. The one thing that kind of stood out to me was the one where the guy is like, he has to give a speech, right? And you know, he's like, what was it called? 15 million merits? That one. Where he basically, that one.
The American Idol show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that reminded me of Martin Luther King Day a lot. I mean, because even people that are more living in his message or have a better understanding of his message are still kind of making a buck off of it. Like I said, there's people on the side. They're like, hey, Martin Luther King Day, come on down and support whatever. Buy a t-shirt. So people do that.
Yeah.
And in one of those episodes, there's the guy who has, like, something to say. Look at us. We're just out here just, you know, buying something to
like, it means nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything. We're just basically capitalizing on our life, or anything that has any real value, we immediately slap a price tag on it and sell it. And that's what we're doing. Mm. There's a lot of this. There's a lot of that. And everybody's co-opting this dude's message. And I was reading some today where they were saying that basically the Reagan era was like the first step to that. Because I think Ronald Reagan was really against Martin Luther King and civil rights. That it was like a nuisance or some shit like that. And a lot of it, the first step towards
civil rights nuisance.
Yeah, towards like sanitizing Martin Luther King was by giving him a holiday in a lot of ways. Which is kind of, yeah. I mean... No, everybody just wields him around. God, even, was it Rob Schneider telling John
that
Lewis?
That was a crazy tweet. Oh, my gosh.
God,
what was he thinking, man?
I don't know, man.
Like, it wasn't even, it was nothing even thoughtful or eloquent about the tweet. Like, he sounded like a complete moron.
Mm-hmm.
This from the guy who was making copies, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Martin Luther King, making copy. Yeah, so I think what's important is everybody should take some time around MLK Day is to, like, read up about him. Like, if you don't have a book, read a couple of things that he actually said.
And hit up the sales, guys.
And then buy a t-shirt. I mean,
He had a dream, and you will too, on this great Sealy Posturepedic.
Oh, come on down. We shall overcome high prices.
Oh, it makes me sad.
So, I mean, look, I'm not gonna knock anybody trying to make a buck in this world. Fine, whatever. I think don't do that, and not also look at what he said. Some of the things that he said are really kind of, you know, like radical, and. Those are the things that people need to read. Like, not just the I Have a Dream speech, or just, especially not just that one part. You know, I have a dream that every, you know, little white boys and little black boys will, you know, hang out together. I think that's a quote. It's a direct quote. Yes. They'll hang out and stuff and play Xbox. But,
yeah,
like, some of the other things you said about, like, economic equality, et cetera, et cetera. Those are important.
Letters from a Birmingham Jail, I think, are really, really good. I had to read that when I was in at some point in my life, and when I was homeschooled.
Yeah.
I read a really good thing. Well, I guess you posted it. The thing about education, I co-opted that and put it on Facebook. So you're welcome, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, you know, tying that into last week, I don't know, Jean, did you get a glimpse of it?
I did. That's what I was about to bring up before you were talking.
Cool. Sweet, go ahead. Bring it up.
You just did.
Well, so do you have the quote? Does anybody have the quote in front of them?
Because I don't. That's what I was trying to pull up. You got it?
Don't has it.
Yeah. It is education, therefore. Where is it?
That was a great
the function show. Of education, therefore, is to teach one to think intensively and to think critically. But education, which stops with efficiency, may prove the greatest menace to society. The most dangerous criminal may be the man gifted with reason but with no morals. We must remember that intelligence is not enough. Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education. Complete education gives one not only power of concentration but worthy objectives upon which to concentrate. The broad education will, therefore, transmit to one not only the accumulated knowledge of the race, but also the accumulated experience of social living. And that's where the quote that you published.
Wasn't he like a teenager or something when he wrote that? God. You know, the most profound thing that I said when I was 19 was, I don't even know what it was.
Maybe he was in college. Because there's an in-between part that's left out where he talks about a professor or a teacher who's... He talks about how brilliant he was, but he was a racist, so he was an idiot. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, but I guess we go around the room. I think that's like it's poignant and important for a number of reasons. What, like, I mean, you look at the Secretary of Education right here, right? They just nominated this chick. What's her name? DeVos. Betsy DeVos. And there's a whole lot of conversation about education, what we're supposed to do, right? How are we supposed to teach these kids? Some people are saying, like, well, one of the reasons we got Donald Trump in here is because people can't read. And I think Del, you posted something about reading in the links for the week. Yeah. All these are kind of running through my mind when I read this quote.
I did.
Yeah. Including last week's conversation about time management and efficiency, right? For what? Efficiency for what, guys? You know? And I think all these are really important. I don't know. I don't really have like I didn't come to any conclusions in the time, but I was pretty reflective as I was marching, I guess, maybe. I read that later. You guys have any thoughts about it, Gina?
About the quote?
Yeah, or I mean, yeah, education, efficiency with morals. Et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, it's definitely something we should think about. I did also post an episode of Lexicon Valley. I don't know if anybody got an opportunity to listen to that, and we could probably talk about it even more later, but they were talking about how they don't teach reading in school, and basically there's like a couple of methods for teaching reading to young children, and it just got me thinking about all that kind of stuff, like responsibility of parents to teach and how to teach your children and what the purpose is in teaching. The two different types of methods are phonics versus like basically teaching whole word reading and teaching for the sake of comprehending the text.
Are you saying Hooked on Phonics is like a branch? It's like Calvinism? It's like one thing.
Right.
God, I didn't know I was a Calvinist of reading.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I was under a method. And
you're methodizing me.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's interesting to think about like what we should be teaching, how we should be teaching it to our kids, and then how do you squeeze in those other lessons like what Dr. King was talking about, like teaching character and imparting that and not just
Yeah.
certain checkpoints of education.
Well, I think a lot of the modern, like, and by modern I mean last 20 or 30 years of educational focus and really political focus has been to try to divorce education from morality and politics from morality. Like, government shouldn't legislate morality, right? And schools shouldn't teach you how to feel about things. It should just give you the facts and teach you the knowledge and let you become whatever moral character that you want to become, which is pretty different from, I think, the concept of education in the past. And it's weird because I think that, like, that politics, especially, I was having this conversation with a friend that political views political opinions and, like, legislation should grow out of morality. Like, your morals should dictate your political views, and your political ideology shouldn't dictate your morality or ethical.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And so I think it's really interesting that, but in the context of, like, what we were talking about last week, like Martin Luther King saying, yeah, okay, so if the goal of education is to make you smarter so that you can accomplish things more efficiently, you don't think about, like, the consequences of how it affects people, then the end goal is in and of itself efficiency. In a capitalistic society, that means squeezing the most out of people to make the most money in the shortest amount of time, and screw if it's good for them, or if it's good for society, or good for the economy, or good for the country, or the world, or the environment, you know?
Yeah.
Which is kind of where we're at today.
Yeah, I think we made that exact point last week. We said, I made a genocide joke. All those good genocide jokes. Yeah, and I mean, I think you've seen some of this written about, like, Silicon Valley. And they say, you have a lot of people that are just, you kind of thinking in algorithms and, like, you know, disrupting, which, again, disrupting why? To gain efficiencies is really what they're trying to do, right? And one of the things that they're missing is the effect it's having on people, like real life people, you know? And I guess I never had an opinion, and I've been coming to this conclusion for a while, I think. If I could do college over, I think I would just go, go to be a liberal arts major and just study that. I think I would just do that. And, like, study philosophy or something like that. Because the rest is just kind of, I don't know, it's like just technical. It's like how-to things. Just
skills that you can pick up anytime you need to.
Yeah, and even some of the more skillful people that I've known, one of the problems is that they don't have, like, critical thinking skills. I think you gain in some of these other areas. And ironically, like, these things that people are like, well, English major, well, that doesn't bring, how are you going to make any money? I can pay the rent reading English or something like that. But then, you know, some of those people, some, are more thoughtful, think more critically than other people that have, you know, a hard science degree. And then, again, it's not to knock anybody with a hard science degree. I'm just thinking, generally speaking, we're not very good.
I would say, like, I was going to say that same thing. Like, I feel the more I think about, like, the more happy I am and lucky or blessed or whatever to have gone to liberal arts school and get that education at somewhere. And that's changing. Like, liberal arts schools, the liberal arts part of it is kind of disappearing, but we got it when it was still, like, at Millsaps, at least, like, really held up as something valuable. And I'll say, like, even people that I would, that probably would have gone on to be pretty cold bastards. Like they are pretty deep thinkers about stuff. I have meaningful conversations with them. Even if we ultimately don't agree, they have reasons outside of just the bottom line, you know, of whatever they're talking about to support their thoughts, you know?
Yeah.
So I there might be some degree to which the education influenced the individuals, but I think you have to also consider that people of certain personality types are attracted to certain areas of study, and that it may be more, or at least a large percentage of, it's people who like to think and think critically, analyze things, that would go into a liberal arts field versus something else.
Yeah, I mean,
and then maybe you're being that type of person. You're just kind of an outlier in where you did actually go.
I mean,
yeah, but also, like, the advantage of going to a liberal arts school is you can study something like biology, but still have to, as part of your time there, take a well-rounded liberal arts, like a third to a half of your education is still liberal arts education, and then everything else is just your particular major, you know? And so you still get that, whether you intend to or not, whether you even realize it when you go to the school, you may just pick it because they have a great biology program, you know?
Right.
But you end up studying and getting a deeper education in the other aspects as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I think it's kind of I don't want to say a tragedy, but I think it's, I don't think it's good.
Unfortunate.
Well, so the way that some schools market themselves, like one of these ITC tech kind of places, right? They're like, what spend your time taking philosophy when you're trying to study, you know, management science or whatever the case may be, right? Like, I could spend more time in things that I'm actually going to do in the real world, you know, not waste my time with other subjects. And I'm like, man, you're really missing out, you know? Like, those things are, like, when else are you going to study them? When else are you going to sit down and read philosophy and talk about it with other people and that whole kind of thing? You're never going to do that. You're not, I mean, you're not going to get more time when you're 45, you know? It's not going to happen. And I think you're missing out just because you wanted to hurry up and get a jump start on your, you know, air conditioning degree.
But it's more efficient to just study what you need to start your career.
Yeah, I mean, and I think because we don't there's a combination. That person, they have a point.
The value
they have a good
on.
Point because it turns out our society at large doesn't really value that kind of thing. Like, we're saying, you know what? Yeah, it doesn't matter. Let's just come out here and get this degree. Look at Donald Trump. You ask him what books he has. He's like, I have books over there. I don't know what books they are.
I read all the books. Lots of good books.
What are you going to say, him?
Nothing. Can you hear me?
Not really.
Okay, that explains why you keep saying what I'm saying.
yeah. I think I hear Dell Extra is what the deal is. I'm gonna
move this. It's because I'm so close to the mic.
Dell's whispering central things into my ear.
So yeah, man. Yeah.
So we're pretty much better than everybody, I guess.
That's what, isn't that what we reestablish every week on this show?
Here's how we're better than you.
So on the subject of education, Dell, you wanted to talk about math.
I guess. I just thought it was an interesting. All right.
I mean, so maybe you can explain. I would like to hear you explain that article.
What's good about math, man?
So it's just an article expressing the idea that this other mathematical constant, tau, should replace pi in formulas, and that tau, which is basically, which is just 2 times pi, it's just pi, 2 times pi, but it would make, it doesn't do that much, like, for simple geometry, but when you get into, like, trigonometry and sines and cosines and stuff like that, it actually simplifies the process and I think connects more with what you're doing to, like, being able to, like, imagine it instead of it being super abstract and having to, some, like, pi radians. Like, I don't know what the hell a radian is, but you don't have to do that when you have tau for some reason. But it just made a lot of sense.
I know 2 pi r squared. What is that about?
Pi r squared is the area of a circle.
Yeah. And if it's 2 pi r squared, what is that?
2 pi r is the circumference of a circle.
Sweet.
So pi is the ratio of the circle to the radius.
Yeah.
That's a constant. So no matter how big the circle gets, the ratio between the circumference and the radius is the same. And so tau is the ratio between the circumference and the diameter, which is the radius is half the circle from the center to the edge. The diameter is all the way to the cross. Yeah. And it comes from some, like, they didn't have the tools to be able to measure a whole circle back in the day and think of it in terms of diameter. So they did everything in radius.
See, that didn't quite make sense to me when he explained it that way. Yeah, I think what's if I can go through my brain and clear out some old functions that I remember. I just think remember parts of them. I don't know where they go to. Like
right.
Like what is this? What does this match up to?
Yeah, the only thing I stored in my brain related to this was my sixth grade teacher telling us the formula for the area of the circle and then saying, "No, no, pi r round." And I thought it was funny, and then I got glares from people like, "We don't laugh at the teacher."
Nerd. I laughed at it. I enjoy when teachers make jokes. I would laugh. I give them a laugh. I give them a chuckle. So,
the essential argument is that it's just that almost all the formulas that we use with pi in them have a 2 in front of the pi.
So we should just go ahead
just
and
cut.
Might as well just change it and not.
To the chase? Just,
yes.
Cut
so we might as well just make it tau and make it a more elegant, make the formulas more elegant and relate more to what they're actually doing instead of this convoluted thing. Sweet. I agree with it. It's more efficient.
I'm pretty sure Betsy DeVos is going to be cool with that. Just send her an email. Just be like,
gosh. Okay, so the other thing is I've been working at this, you know, with kids and like tutoring them sometimes and seeing Common Core in reality, like reality. And it is, I feel bad. I would, if I saw my kid having to deal with that stuff, I would pull them out of school immediately and find somewhere else or teach them myself because it is the most convoluted mess I've ever seen.
I've heard so many people say that. And then I've heard some people say, actually, it's not that bad. It actually makes it simple. So, I think I don't know. I'm going to ask you here: is it possibly just that it's different than the way you learned it?
No. I mean, I take that into consideration, but it's like the way they ask a question. So they take something that's pretty like a logical, concrete, objective process, right? Like math is math is math. Mm-hmm. And then they put it into a subjective sort of way. And they ask this wordy question. And then, so like they're dealing, so the kids are dealing with like rounding, right? And instead of like dealing with hard numbers to make it more practical in real life, they'll like do this thing and they'll say, Tina has 11:57 and Bobby gives her $9.03. About how much money does she have? And they don't want an exact number. They don't want you to actually do the math and then round it to the appropriate thing. They want you to just say $21 or $20, somewhere around there. Which is like, okay, right? But that's really an abstract, like if you really think about that, that's a higher level than just doing the pure math, like in doing the hard numbers. That's an abstraction of the math to create this like sort of fuzzy real world experience that's fine. But yeah, the reason that we do it is because we know the hard objective side of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was going to say.
Sorry, Gina.
No, you're fine. I was going to say, like, you couldn't just pull a number out, I guess, like that without knowing how to add those things up in the first place.
Yeah, doesn't a whole lot of experience, like in actual even science, it tells you that there's like a lot of learning the basics helps you learn other things. Like, once you have a firm grasp of the basics, you are able to do the more abstract and complicated things where you can twist it around and turn it upside down and do abstract things.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
And then the other thing. Go ahead, Gina.
No, it's fine. I was going to say that's the same way the whole reading methods, teaching reading, seem to me, like phonics versus whole words. They want you to just, I mean, essentially you'd have to memorize words in order to learn to read. You'd have to know whole words to see them because they don't want you to sound it out because the thinking is, that way of learning would be boring and the kids would lose interest.
I guess. I honestly don't even remember how I learned to read. I don't know. Like, I don't ever remember being, like, sound. My mom just read to me this is what she said. She read to me and then just kind of showed me the words. And so eventually I just like picked it up, I guess. I don't really remember having
to sound
anything.
I feel like you do some of both through, you know, practicing at home, because there's where parents will read like the same story over and over again to their kid. And so they know what words are coming, and then they'll associate, you know, the sounds with what they see on the page. So I think there is some of that memorization and just identifying the whole words, but then there's also sounding it out, knowing what the sounds are so that you can pick up new words.
Yeah. And it's again, like Del was saying, knowing how to round something so that you can figure out how to get, I guess. I don't know. Sure. I feel like the problem is that when people say, like, Common Core sounds bad, or Common Core sucks, or it's dumb, I feel like sound like people think it's saying, what is all this, man? I could balance a budget. You know, ain't no thing. I don't understand, man. You know, you just, you know, put up, you only spend what you put in, you know what I mean, what you get in, so I don't really see what the big deal is. And, like, actually, the federal budget is pretty complicated and, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I guess as I'm saying is that, like, I think one of the things preventing me from saying, wow, it sounds bad, I'm going to homeschool my kid, is that I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. What do you know of Common Core, aside from what you've seen and what people have said
about I've seen? I mean, I've read other things, but what I've come, the conclusion that I've come to is that there's a necessity for the people whose job it is to, like, invent curriculum to be innovative, and a need to, once we say, well, this is the way we've taught it for 30 years or whatever, and so we need to go back to the drawing board and figure out a new way to think about it. You know, basically, it's basically that. Like, it's couched in, oh, well, this isn't working, this isn't perfect, so we need to figure out a better way to do it, and, oh, this is more practical, quote unquote, right? Common Core is more practical, right? That's the argument, is that uses real world, like real life situation more, it's more presents it that way. But what they've essentially done is abstract math. And really what they're doing is making it, to me, is they're making math subjective. They're making math, hard numbers, something where you can be like, somebody can say, well, 2 plus 2.3 is 4.3. And you can be like, nah, it's 4, you know? And that argument, I can see that argument happening with kids when they're in college, you know, or older.
I mean, I don't know. I guess in their defense, I mean, I guess you can sometimes do that. Like, if I say a couple or a few or a handful, what is it? Those mean things to me. They don't necessarily mean things to other people. And I think if they're just trying to get at that, like, all right, it doesn't really matter if they have 12.2. It matters that they have, you know, 20 or so. It's more 20 than it is 100. And I guess that's the important thing. But you know what? You know what that is? You know how you know how you know that? You know how you know that? You know that by rounding, because I know 2 is closer to 0 than it is to 100. So yeah, I feel like I need to know that part. So
until you get to like a chemistry class where the precise like 0.01 difference will like completely change the reaction that you're trying to get. You know, like it matters in situations, and I think it's more important to be precise, and then let the people relax it in their own ways when they need to, than it is to be relaxed about it when you're learning it and almost diminish the importance of decimals and things like that. And then when they get to college and their chemistry professor fails because they rounded everything or said it's about this on their, you know, test.
Well, I think I'll leave it open because I haven't experienced it, and it's going to be a while before our kid goes through that.
It'll be different by the time they get there.
I feel like it's on me and it's on my wife to teach our kid. And I'm not going to leave it all the way up. They have to go past the test. But I think that's a lesson unto itself, that, you know, sometimes you got to go do the job and check the box. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's all there is to learn. And I feel like when I was like a kid, like in elementary, I kind of felt that, like, well, if they don't teach you in school, then it doesn't matter sometimes.
Right.
even though I was curious about things, and they're all like, oh, yeah, learning's cool, but here are the things that matter, you know? And I guess if I had it to do over, I would encourage myself that, you know, like, this is what you need to learn here to pass the grade here, and that is a box to check, but it's not everything to learn. There's other things.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's on us. Would you agree?
I would.
If you were in this circumstance. All right, so I think one of the coolest things, and I think there are ways to improve the way we teach stuff. One of the coolest things I saw, and I don't have the link off anywhere, I just thought of it right now, was this dude that...
Just made it up?
No, yeah. Was this dude that was talking about like a better way to teach math, like using like programming. And he was kind of showing an example, like a slider that would run through the numbers like 0 to 10 in a function, and then you could see it being graphed like as you slid it, and that would help them learn, you know, a variable, you know, versus just a number like x. Like x equals what? Find the value of x. Like you can, it's more intuitive to the way a lot of people think if you could figure it out by just moving it around. You're like, oh, I see how it works. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess you can kind of get to this point. But where it really hit home for me was the equation for the area of a function. Like for whatever reason, like I could never picture that in my head. And when he did it, it was like, it's all this area. It just like lit up and like is part of his little thing. And I was like, oh shit, I never knew that. And I was like, what the fuck? How did I never know that? Like, you know what I mean? When, you know, calculus and whatever.
So you're a visual learner.
Yeah, I guess. That's what it was. And so I could see the practicality of that.
So it's learning for guys.
Learning for dudes.
Which is why tau needs to be the constant and not pi.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Got it.
But I also think that a really good teacher could help you out. And I always remember that too, is that like,
that's for sure.
Yeah, it was like there was a I think I had to take business calculus or something like that in college, and it was just like
business calculus. Is that what you said?
Was it business calculus? The one that we took together.
Yeah,
let me take that. I thought the teacher was great. He was a great teacher. I felt like he taught well. Like I don't know, it was just weird. Like the class was enjoyable. You know what I mean? Sometimes like I never had a problem with math, but I enjoyed that math class. Yeah, he made me want to learn more math. You know what I mean? Like, I enjoyed doing the things that he's doing. Like, sometimes it's great. So you can find Jiro. We can find the value of Jiro. And I was like, this is great. Yeah. Gina, what were you saying?
Yeah. I got to be in that class, and I was very proud of myself because ever since the no-no pi r round lady, math was, like, downhill for me. Even though, I mean, I did okay in math all the way through high school, and I was in, like, sort of advanced classes, but I always felt like it was a struggle from algebra to pre-cal, and so going into college, I was dreading any more math classes, but that one was pretty awesome. He was a really good teacher, so yeah, there's definitely something to be said for just having a good teacher and not just having to rely on yourself to absorb the material or teach yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Yeah, so I feel, you know, like the best teachers that I've had, like, made me enjoy not only the subject, but, you know, like they helped me want to learn, right? And I feel like really if you just had that, then you can kind of get around to these common core things. I don't know, but you have this huge problem. Like, how do you teach millions of kids that learn sort of differently? I don't even know, because I mean, apparently there was like a study that said, yeah, it turns out there are not a whole lot of different learning styles, whatever.
Just dumb people.
Yeah, I don't know. But I know like some people are ready to learn a thing at a different time. You know, like some, I think they've some testing has borne this out that some kids are ready to learn, like say math at, you know, now. And if you're not teaching them math now, then they're going to not be excited about learning it later. And I think we all are pretty familiar with that. Like, I'm like, hey, I'm going to tell you about the show. And you're like, I don't really care right now. I want to do something else. And I'm like, well, it's 8 o'clock. Right now is the time that you learn about, you know, literature. Too bad, kid. And you're like, well, so you're not going to absorb it.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
I agree with that. I know people who homeschool their kids by pretty much just letting them explore where they want to explore and like guiding them and like they find an interest, something they're interested in. And so they help their kid learn about it, you know, in the context, like learning the history of it that way through what they're interested in and learn any math that's involved in like the process, you know what I'm saying? And kind of like take what they're interested in and learn through exploring an interest rather than saying, oh, this is your fifth year in school, so this is what you are supposed to know by this point, you know?
So does that work out well? Because I've heard some charter schools kind of work like that too. But I mean, do you ever have kids growing up and then being like, oh, I wish I had more like structured curriculum because I know so much about Barbies now, and it's kind of weird.
I'm sure there are people that feel like that, but I think one of the benefits of it, and one of the things that I always tell people when I talk about being homeschooled, is that more than what I learned, it's that I learned how to teach myself what I need to know about anything and go find how to find the information. And so I can explore an interest and get really geeky about like beer brewing, and in a month know, have all the information, even if I've not read it, you know, like have it all there and know a pretty good amount of like beer brewing geekery, you know, and be able to get really into it instead of having to go take like somebody's class on how to brew beer, you know, and do it 25,000 times. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. People have to do that, but
yeah,
some of that might be just you, right? Because you might have been.
Just a super intelligent person that just happened to come on the earth and be that. Like, I really don't think that's.
Oh, we know
me.
That.
I really think it's.
No, I mean, but I all right. So, like, your desire to learn something, right? Like, you can see it to the end. Because I was in homeschooled. And I think I'm similar in that way too. Like when I get on something, I want to figure it out.
Right? Right.
And I think Gina, and you're like that too. You know, when you have something interesting, you'll dive in. And I don't know if anybody's too different that way. But I think we all did well in school, right? And there are some people that say that the people are like, "Well, is that going to be on a test? No. All right, then I don't care." Like I never understood that. I wanted to know it just to know it, and I don't know. I mean. So I
just see kids that they're interested in things. Like, I feel like school beats that out of kids sometimes, you know, the joy of learning. And maybe parents who are jaded about it too, who think that the end goal is the goal is not learning and exploration, but the end goal is the knowledge that you need to pass the test to get the good grades, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that kind of like takes it out of them. So
yeah,
I would say it's
probably.
Probably had parents that encouraged and fostered that sense of wonder and exploration too.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of this comes down to like the original question in this country when we said, okay, what are we going to do? Like, what is education for? Is reading and writing is what? So we have just like a citizenry that can kind of vote. Is that really the whole goal? Like, what is the whole goal? So they can get jobs, so they can be educated. There's a lot of university systems, like the land-grant universities, were founded so that way they can teach people to go fulfill a skill, right? And right. There's a lot of close working with, like, corporations that, like, that, you know, especially business schools that go in and say, you know, we need more people that are good at collaborating, so do that. And all of a sudden, the curriculum in colleges is collaboration. You have a lot of teamwork or whatever. In a lot of ways, colleges are built so that way you can just go get a job and make you employable. So I don't think people are very wrong when they're like, well, I'm just trying to get this degree so I can get out there and get me a job. I mean, yeah, yes.
That's why I think that people shouldn't go to college immediately from high school anymore. I think they should go do whatever they want in the world, figure out what they want to do with their life. Because that used to be like you go to college to kind of like, figure that out, right? To kind of explore things and figure it out. And now it's like, no, you got to know by your 11th grade year what you're going to pursue in college and go straight into that and go all the way through it. And so people don't actually have any like time for reflection or exploring what they want.
Yeah. It's cutthroat, man, because by the time you're in college, if you don't know what the hell you want to do, you're already behind. You didn't get the internship you needed. You're like 8 steps behind this other dude that's going to kick your ass.
If you go travel the world for 2 years before, though, then you probably have at least an idea or a seriousness about what you want to pursue. You know, and you're doing it because you want to do it and not because if you don't, then you're going to get left behind.
At least that's the thinking, man. I'm hoping. I mean, I think I took a year off after I graduated high school. Some practical reasons, but I think it did me a lot of good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Gene, what do you think about that? Should you go backpacking through Europe like Del?
I guess you can, and then you come back and you don't fit in society anymore because... You've learned how to appreciate the world, and you no longer want to go put your head down and just punch the buttons.
But think about if everybody did that. What kind of revolution would happen?
It'd be awful. We'd all be loving each other and ridiculous.
Oh, no, man. There's a lot of people that don't like going to visit the other side of town. I mean... Like, we went to, like, New York, and we enjoyed it. We had a good time. And there's people that we know from this that work at the same place that went to New York and hated it. They're like, oh, it's too many people. It's the worst. What does it do there?
It's like we didn't go to the same place.
Yeah, it is.
At least they know. They went and experienced, and they know what they don't like. And so.
Yeah.
Or they showed up knowing they weren't going to like it.
I think there's a lot of that there. I don't know, but then you could say that we showed up. No one we don't like it, right?
This is going to be awesome. It's awesome.
I don't know, man. I think 11 and 9 is probably about 50 when you think about it, turns out.
Yeah.
About 50. I don't know. That's good.
Okay, so I picked out a movie.
Oh, man.
So we can watch this by the next show. See, I thought about picking something like MLK related, or by the next show it's going to be February. It was like something like a romance, but I just decided to scrap all that. And you know, one day I was browsing Netflix, as you do for hours on end, trying to find something worth watching, and I happened upon a movie called The Interview. And apparently there's like 20 movies called The Interview, so it's probably not the one that you're thinking of right now.
Seth Rogen.
But this one came out in 1998, and it's really highly reviewed, so we'll see if we're all disappointed or if it's actually great. But it's available on Netflix, so watch it, The Interview from 1998. It's a crime/drama film, and it stars Hugo Weaving, if you don't know who that is.
Elrond. Agent Smith.
Exactly. And a couple other guys. So, weird. Supposed to be good. Watch it over the next 2 weeks. We'll talk about it on the next show, among other things. And in case you guys didn't notice, Brad's not here.
No, I didn't notice that. Barack Obama was reading books while he was president. How did this dude manage to do anything?
Like, I have no idea. I can't read books.
And I'm fucking tired. I can't even read this book.
Yeah.
But he's already like reading the books and shit. And apparently he just like... kills all the reports. Like, they give him a stack of reports, he's just like tearing through it. He's funny, fucking finds time to go shoot basketball. God,
hate him.
Glad he's out of there. He's making me look bad now. At least Donald Trump, he's not gonna make me look bad. He's hasn't read any books.
Him, I can relate.
He's not gonna read any reports.
He's never read a book.
I feel like it could literally feel like, you know like, I think one thing that Ta-Nehisi Coates said about his meeting with Barack Obama was like, he was struck by how smart he was. Like, he was kind of intimidated by his intellect. Like, they're just having a conversation, and then Barack Obama just like, you know, like, you can see him thinking about these things, and he has like some thoughtful points about things. I feel like
Donald
you wouldn't do
Trump's
that with Donald
not gonna
Trump.
Strike
no.
anybody.
Like, he's, no, he's not. Like, I was reading this thing that a friend of the show posted. She posted here that, you know, about Barack Obama reading all these books, and then Donald Trump's like, yeah, I mean, I think there's some books over there. That's pretty good books. Books are good, I guess. So there you go.
Awful, guys.
Shining light in
so,
darkness.
So, I'll poll the group.
That's dirty.
Brace yourselves. Who's going to be watching the inauguration.
I ain't watching it. I can't believe
they do it. Every day this week I've read something about the inauguration. I was like, I thought that already happened. I'm not. I won't be watching it.
It's not official for, as of this recording, 2 days.
Tomorrow? Friday?
Friday.
Friday.
The day Radiohead tickets go on sale?
Sweet. It's a coincidence? Symbolic, I think not. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to watch it either. Like, I kind of felt like I should so I could be informed, but then I also feel like I should avoid it on principle, so.
Yeah.
I don't know how informed you'd be reading, like, watching him get inaugurated. I think all the other things.
You know, just to be a boob, you know.
What did Del, you posted this thing, experts in authoritarianism advise how to keep a list of things subtly changing around you.
Yeah, that was a pretty good post.
So, I guess in the 4 or 5 minutes we have left in the show, do you want to kind of summarize those or something? How do you do
that? I don't know. Why don't we just put a link on the website and people can, because it's gonna continue to grow.
Yeah,
I think.
No kidding.
Keep updating it, and it's pretty. I don't know. Like, I've never seen somebody try to do this before, so I don't know if, like, similar things could be said for, like, other presidents. I don't think so, though. And I would read it, like, the subtle things that are, like, not making mainstream news or made a big deal of in mainstream news, which are all fake news sites, according to Trump.
Yeah.
That you should just kind of be aware of and thinking about. And I think it's just a good reminder that we need to be vigilant, because not paying attention is how things happen, like government coups and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and again, you want to tie that to what a lot of things that Martin Luther King said. I mean, he was an activist, you know? Like, a lot of people like to attribute to him like a passivity, that he was nonviolent. He would just kind of let things happen.
First and foremost,
he was an agitator. He was
a small business owner.
Well, I guess secondly, the third thing, you know, when you kind of really get to know him, turns out he was an activist. I don't know if you know this.
Who would have thought?
He's a pretty good speaker. You could spin a yarn. So, I mean, that's the thing, too, is I think, like, if you have a conviction, and you've thought about it and you feel strongly about it, I think the thing to do is to, you know, make it known. And even if it makes you uncomfortable. I was thinking about this too, because sometimes I feel like a little bit like, I don't know. I really don't think Donald Trump is, I don't think he's a legitimate president either. I think he's ridiculous. He brings shame upon this country. And I feel sometimes like saying that is like maybe putting my wrist, like people gonna criticize me, they're not gonna hire me, something like that. And I'm like, you know what? That's being a coward. Like, I can't believe that I'm entertaining those thoughts there. Like, yeah, it could happen, but
that's not a reason to,
yeah,
to be quiet.
It really isn't. Like, I mean, like, God, you know? How shameful it is that I'm not standing up for that. Not to say call a spade or lame a lame, you know? And I think that's important. And if we learn anything, like, seriously, like, again, it's one thing I saw that there. I was like, yeah, you know what? I gotta make sure I'm not a coward out here and just protecting me and mine. I think there's a quote where he said, like, just because you might lose a job, because you might not get paid as much, because you might do this, you know? I think I retweeted that.
We need more people to stand for their convictions, for sure.
Yep.
For sure. The one of the most disappointing things that I've gone through is I have a group of friends who tweet or text all the time, and one was a pretty staunch Trump supporter the whole time, and the others have been like pretty hardcore Republicans but were like very anti-Trump at the beginning. And to see their, I was thinking about the other day, to watch kind of the transition, the transformation of them going from taking a pretty harsh anti-Trump stance to kind of trying to legitimize him,
mm-hmm.
to accepting him, has been disappointing and scary on a level.
Yeah.
You know? It sucks.
How have your conversations with them been since?
I mean, tense. Like, you know, I'm the only one that's, well, there's one other guy, but he tries to, like, bridge the gap, and I'm just pretty heavy-handed, like, no, this is the guy who said this, and it's like this, and this, and this, and you can't, like, can't discount those things, right. You know? And so.
I have that quote.
They pretty much just ignore me and stop talking when I tweet those things. I just shut the conversation down, so whatever. Or text.
That's sad. None of it breaks through.
So this person's, Sarah Schaefer, tweeted this, that feeling when someone posts MLK talking to you directly because you're 38 and the dictator's about to take office and you don't want your spirit to die. Here's a quote from Martin Luther King. You may be 38 years old, as I happen to be, and one day some great opportunity stands before you and calls you to stand up for some great principle, some great issue, some great cause. And you refuse to do it because you're afraid. You refuse to do it because you want to live longer. You're afraid that you'll lose your job, or you're afraid that you'll be criticized, or that you'll lose your popularity. Or you're afraid that somebody will stab you or shoot at you or bomb your house, so you refuse to take the stand. Well, you may go on and live until you are 90, but you're just as dead at 38 as you would be at 90. And the cessation of breathing in your life is but the belated announcement of an earlier death of the spirit. It's like, God, dang. Ain't nobody really going to shoot at me, but it might just be like, I don't even know what. I don't even know what the fuck I'm afraid of. So anyway. There's that.
And in 7 years, you still won't be that eloquent.
No, I won't. I was like, God. Fucking hate this dude Martin Luther King out here. Don't let me, God.
All right, so everybody use this next 2 weeks to make something better of yourself and also watch the interview.
You know what I did would say? That was remarkably similar to Mel Gibson's speech in Braveheart. I think he said the same thing, right? Right?
I think that live. Martin Luther King took that from...
I think he took it from Braveheart. He watched Braveheart, and then he said it. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for listening.